Folks, good afternoon. Freedom 106.5 FM basis here, Better Men Suit Base. Let's welcome Miss Sharon Inglefield. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us on your program this afternoon.
All right. Welcome. Thank you for all the good work that you've been doing. All right. So in terms of road safety with Trinidad and Tobago, let's start with the that demerit point system that has been taken away. Do you think that was a good move or a bad move?
Well, I think the public knows how we feel. You know, as far as we're concerned, it's a preventative measure to save lives. Mm-hmm. We are very pro education and training, and the fact that we need to incorporate hazard perception and risk management into our license and examinations prior to the privilege to drive on our nation's roads. We have done a lot of advertising on social media. The ministry, I know, did a lot of advertising, a lot of stakeholder engagement. Plus, they put out lots of flyers and brochures through their offices. The police officers visit our offices at Arrive Alive at the Fernandez Complex all the time to obtain what we call our road traffic violation booklet that includes the laws of the land when it comes to driving safely on our nation's roads. So education is vital, but there are so many drivers in Trinidad and Tobago who have not been trained properly to drive our nation's roads through the gaps that exist in the license and office. And therefore, if you continue to push the boundaries, there must be enforcement. Mm-hmm. The only reason that our country was recognized during the last decade to action of road safety, when the deaths were increased by 50% in 10 years, one of 10 countries worldwide to gain this recognition, is the fact that enforcement has to be coupled with education and training. You cannot just educate and train, because a human being will always push the boundaries. Drivers will always push the boundaries. And therefore, there must be law and order, and those laws of the land must be enforced as part of road safety preventative measures to save lives.
Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, education and training, what do you think of instead, right? If somebody does, has a serious road infraction, what about instead of they pay the fine or something, or maybe they could do some training, do some retraining, do some, something with the highway code or something, again, to instill that education that you spoke about?
Absolutely. So it's vitally important that drivers who are on our nation's roads who continue to get fines are retrained. That should be part of the system of retraining drivers who continue with the reckless behavior, and therefore a huge risk to our road users. So training and re-education is vitally important. It was part of the amendment to the Motor Vehicle Road Traffic Law that drivers were to be retrained, that your driver's record would track your behavior. And therefore, we support that. We support training and education, especially consistent retraining, particularly of drivers who continue to be reckless on our nation's roads. I mean, in wet season, we've had a lot of drivers run off the roads. Thank God for those barriers that exist. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, we see continuous maintenance of those barriers. And if it wasn't for the enforcement of our laws, we would have had a huge increase during this rainy season, where drivers continue to push the boundaries, to drive above the speed limit. They don't slow down and adapt their speed to road traffic conditions, being the wet roads that are slippery, especially after the first rainfall, when the asphalt roads become even more slippery than during the dry season. And then, of course, tires. A lot of people are not maintaining the vehicles properly. The tires are bald, therefore you don't have enough traction. It's very, very important that we check our tires, check the tread of our tires to ensure that we're getting maximum traction when we're driving, particularly in wet season, that our windshield wipers are working, that our tail lights, our brake lights are working. We've seen a number of serious rear-end collisions due to lights not working. Very important that we maintain our vehicles so that we save ourselves and other road users from serious injuries and death on our roads.
But some people may say, maintaining your vehicle, yes, that is onus on you. But the kind of bad roads that we have here, like, you know, you could be driving, you're going up Portal, bam, your light comes out, and then you'll be able to get a ticket for that. But, you know, we have to have some accountability with how our roads are. What say you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We agree with that. And this is why Arrive Alive continues to have meetings with our government. To you know, whenever we meet with the media, we talk about good markings, properly maintained guardrails and barriers to avoid crossover collisions, to avoid vehicles going into our rivers, to avoid the fact that we're confused. We don't know where to turn because the markings are not accurate. Markings, our roads need to be self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. So markings are critical. Good markings, good road paving, the absence of potholes with the asphalt lake, with the fact that we export asphalt. Very, very important that we see less and less potholes, that there's an annual budget that is increased and looked at seriously every year within the Ministry of Transport and Aviation Services that prepares our roads based on the heavy traffic, the high volume of traffic we have seen, particularly with the trucks. Some of them are not necessarily obeying the law, and the trucks are full of stone and gravel, and therefore they add to the disrepair of our roads. They're not weighed. They're not at, they're not weighed regularly the way they should be. They're not inspected as often as they should be. Very, very important that, you know, everyone has a responsibility. Every stakeholder, the driver, the ministry, the police, all our law enforcement agencies, everyone has a responsibility. And I absolutely agree, and so does Arrive Alive, absolutely agree that everybody must live up to their responsibility. So yes, the potholes need attention, the roads need attention, the drivers have a responsibility. Arrive Alive has a responsibility to keep advocating for good roads, good road safety, infrastructure, better enforcement, education and training, emergency response, post-crash care response, very, very important as well. And the data should always support all our advocacy. So it isn't, road safety is not a gut, it's not a reflex. It is based on data that's provided by the stakeholders. It's supported by data. It's supported by international practices of different countries where, you know, certain law, certain policy works. So this is not something that we haven't put a lot of thought, a lot of reading and education into. The stakeholders get together and discuss it. And yes, I totally agree that everyone has a responsibility to make sure that we have less crashes and less injuries and less death on our roads.
All right. Now, something that could lead to a crash and injury and even death, I don't know if you're familiar, but of course you would be familiar, they widened the highway just after Shogunas, Freeport, Chase Village going down there. But the lines in the road, people have been complaining for this for a long time. I myself have experienced this. They did not paint over the lines properly. So you get sort of a confusion when you're driving there. You don't know which line is which. Somebody could run into you. There's going to be a serious accident there. So I would like you and your company to please advocate for these lines to be painted over properly. They did not paint over the lines properly, and it's a sort of a crisscross when you're driving. If what you yourself could probably take a drive down just after Shogunas there, you know, Freeport, it's right in between there. You will see where the lines are not painted properly, and it could be a serious accident.
And again, we appeal to everybody to let's also act and write into the ministry, email them, call them when these things happen. We all need to ensure that we fight for our country, that we fight for a safer road system. And therefore, we too pick up the phone and call. I know it takes time, but it's important because, you know, Arrive Alive is a small NGO. We can't be everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that it is important that we all try to make TNT a better place, a safer place, a healthier country.
All right. So if somebody has to call, we call what? Ministry of Works. So people call
Ministry,
us,
yes. Call Ministry of Transport and Ministry Civil Transport. Aviation.
Right.
They've changed their name. Okay. We certainly, I have taken note of that particular intersection that you're talking about where they painted over markings, yes, at Chase Village and Freeport.
Yes.
And I will certainly do my part.
Mm-hmm.
But I appeal to everyone to, yes, please also pick up the phones and call.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. I mean, I see mothers with babies walking into the road because the sidewalks are not well maintained.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we all rally. You know, it has to start with the grassroots all the way up. Rally and speak out and call, and till we get the pavements fixed so pedestrians can walk with their children to school and to work and back home every day in a safer environment. Mm-hmm. Very, very important to have better maintained sidewalks, better maintained infrastructure for driving and cycling, because everyone has a right to safe journey to and from work and school and back.
Yeah, man. One thing I do, I park my vehicle and I walk to work, you know, every day. And now, you know, so I put myself sometimes in the mode of a pedestrian. And I see sometimes things that pedestrians have to go through. For example, where there's the pedestrian crossing, there's some drivers, either they don't know what a pedestrian crossing is, or they just don't like to stop at a pedestrian crossing, and have to tell them, excuse me, there's a pedestrian crossing, you have to stop. You know?
Absolutely. And we rally for the pedestrians all the time, because as far as we're concerned, if a vehicle crosses a pedestrian crossing or stops on it, parks on it to let out passengers, or you know, it's against the law. And really, and truly, there should be huge fines attached, because we're trying to change behavior that drivers respect pedestrians and pedestrians respect themselves, so that they know that I can cross safely on a pedestrian crossing, and therefore I shouldn't cross in between cars, which is dangerous to my life and the lives of my children. So we need to change behavior that by having better infrastructure, safer infrastructure, well-maintained infrastructure like sidewalks. And then we penalize those drivers that are parking and stopping on pedestrian crossings, because that really is grossly unfair and disrespectful to pedestrians.
Mm. Now, I know we can't have the traffic wardens everywhere, but in terms of cameras and working cameras, how do the camera system work? I was even at certain traffic lights, you know, you're break our light, you're supposed to get your ticket in email. I don't know if you reached that yet, but where are we with the working cameras on the roads?
To our knowledge, we have no spot speed or red light camera detection.
Mm.
We have not operationalized the law to have spot speed, which means if you're going too fast, you're stopped and you get a ticket. We do not have the operationalization of those two laws, the red light camera and the spot speed camera. We're hoping, we met with the minister, and we are hoping to achieve that. I am really hoping in the next 18 months, and if not before, because that will also help decrease the number of serious collisions. That, you know, when drivers know that their vehicles are being tracked for speeding, especially in a rainy season when your risk double on wet roads, you know, I would love to see enforcement supported by technology being the cameras that should be there. We're 2025, we need to have that camera enforcement to support our police officers.
Mm-hmm. Another thing some of us drivers don't like to do, and sometimes it's because of safety, is to stop at traffic light at nights. I'm reading a story here. Driver robbed at traffic lights by a man wearing a dress. All right, a Pity Valley man was robbed by, you know, by a traffic light man wearing, yeah, a dress at night. What I usually do is, if at night and I'm approaching a traffic light, especially in certain areas, I would kind of like slow down before the traffic light, you know, before it turns red, and I would just be driving. So, but then somebody could be coming behind me and bam, you know. So, but what do you recommend people do at night in terms of safety, who really don't want to come to a complete stop at a traffic light?
Well, that's a very difficult question, because in 2009, my son was killed at a traffic light in the night by a driver who ran the red. And, you know, he used the same excuse that it's unsafe to stop at night. So that, you know, it is a very difficult thing because of the crime in our country. But I would say that it, you know, stop at the red, stop at the yellow, and make sure it is clear to move off before you move off at an intersection, because It is very dangerous, especially if the vehicle is coming at you of dark colors, navy blue, black, you know, difficult to see vehicles, difficult to see pedestrians, particularly in the night if they're wearing dark colors. We always advise pedestrians to wear bright colors or white in the night. So I know the crime is high. I know of these stories, but I appeal to all drivers to be careful if you're moving off at a signalized intersection on the green, much less on the red and yellow at night. We have seen a number of people breaking the red lights even in the day. And we've had a number of serious collisions at signalized intersections, which is why we have always advocated for roundabouts versus traffic lights. Again, roundabouts slow down traffic at complex intersections where there's a high volume of traffic and many, many different turnoffs. So roundabouts are much safer. Again, we need to have roundabouts included in the examination for novice drivers of all
classes. There are some people who don't know how to use a roundabout.
Exactly. And that is something that I encourage everybody in the public to look at our website and pull up this little booklet that talks about how you traverse a roundabout, what lanes to use your indicator to slow down prior to getting onto that roundabout, making sure you're in the correct lane, making sure that you use your signals at all times. You know, be a hero. Don't think you're smart by not using your indicator. If you're turning left, you should be in the left lane. You should have on your indicator and you turn left. If you're going right around the roundabout to the furthest turn off, you should be using your indicator. And again, ensuring that all traffic knows that you are not getting off until the last bypass road. So it's very important that, you know, we read up and re-educate ourselves, and let's really read and comprehend what we're reading. Let's not listen to all the gossip and all the confusion going on around us with regards how to traverse the road safely and where to read and what to listen to. Arrive Alive has these booklets on our website. The roundabout is there. We teach you how to traverse the roundabout. The laws of the land are there. You know, it's very, very important that we educate ourselves. We have about wearing a seatbelt. We talk about stopping distance, making sure that especially when the roads are wet, you double your stopping distance, that you can always see the back tires, the back wheels of the vehicle in front of you. You have that 3-second count that when the vehicle in front of you passes maybe a lamppost or a tree, you count 3 seconds and you know that that is the stopping distance that you should be using on a dry road, and that your risks double on a wet road. So make sure that you have a proper stopping distance, particularly if you have noticed that drive in front of you, their lights are not working, their brake lights are not working. I mean, you want to avoid a rear-end collision. You want to ensure that you understand that for every 16 kilometers over this speed limit, your risk doubles, you know. You need to really read up and educate yourselves. And instead of just surfing the net, read up on road safety. Read up what defensive driving means. Read up on hazard perception and risk management. Really, let's educate ourselves. The Prime Minister talked about giving all Form 1s computers. You know, everybody wants to get their license at age 17. Let's educate ourselves and really understand what it means to be a safe driver.
All right. Do you think the age of license should be, 18, 21? I mean, we don't see a lot of young people getting into the accidents, but do you think that if you're 17, 18, you at least have a little more time to, you know, practice and stuff? What are you with the age limit for drivers? And not only the young, but how do you think about a lot of senior citizens driving on nation's roads? Some of them drive, they're a little slower than others, you know? Or what are you with age limit as far as driving is concerned?
I certainly think medicals and eyesight tests are critical prior to getting your license. I think it's very important that as we get older, we recognize the fact that we need to take into consideration that our perception, distance, that how we manage our risk when driving, our reaction time changes, and therefore we need to ensure that we have done medicals and eyesight tests, and that, you know, we have no issues, you know, health-wise. And therefore, as novice drivers as well, that same thing applies, because we have a lot of drivers whose eyesight are compromised. So very, very important that your eyesight particularly is checked. And we educate ourselves. We have not seen a lot of, thank God, a lot of young drivers in, you know, showing up in the statistics of dying on our roads. It is really until age 35. So it means that the risk is being taken mainly by male drivers who love speed. I have to say, who love speed and love to race on the highways, and particularly the main roads. We have seen the age limit up to 35, and sometimes in some months, 42 of drivers dying and having serious injuries. So I don't necessarily think the age limit needs to increase, but I do think we need to revamp that driver's education prior to giving out licenses, and that drivers need to educate themselves in the meanwhile by doing defensive driving programs, by understanding what risk that you're going to encounter on the roads, and reading, really educating yourself. Very, very important.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we had some questions coming in there on the WhatsApp, 3061065, talking to Miss Sharon Inglefield of Arrive Alive. They're saying a long time ago, Arrive Alive used to voluntarily put reflective cat eyes on certain dangerous roads for assistance for road users. Back, why did they stop? Is that you?
Okay, so Arrive Alive is able to sustain the NGO by sponsorship. The multinationals have been very good to us. Corporate TNT have been very good to us. Every project we do, including these booklets, cat eyes, when you saw the crash cars as reminders of serious collisions, was sponsored. Unless we get sponsorship money in, we're not able to supply cat eyes. So again, I'm appealing to the ministry that cat eyes is something that's really, really important. Again, we need to share information, stakeholder information, that the roads are not dug up when the cat eyes are put down. We need to make sure that those cat eyes are put where the roads are very, very dark. I prefer cat eyes myself instead of huge concrete lampposts that have a big, big risk in the event of a serious collision. You know, we see a lot of people dying because they've driven into a concrete lamppost or trees in some instances. So I do like the idea of cat eyes. Unfortunately, our NGO cannot afford to place cat eyes on our nation's roads at this time.
All right. Also, please implore people to use the walkovers on the highway instead of running across the highway. It can cause their deaths and also serious accidents as well.
I totally agree with that. I totally support that. I'd like to see the wardens and the police officers pulling pedestrians aside. Obviously, I would not like to see pedestrians being given tickets. I really don't believe in that, but I certainly think you could pull them aside and, you know, an educational course. I think a lot of the pedestrians who are crossing the roads and not using those walkovers have a serious issue. I don't know if it's a loss of hope. I don't know if it's just reckless behavior, but I think the wardens and certainly the police officers, as part of a community, joint community program, can pull over those pedestrians and kind of giving them a little educational session on the side of the road, you know, and let them know how dangerous it is. I think it's a serious issue that we need to look into.
Mm-hmm. Well, what have you in terms of the, a long time I haven't seen the breathalyzer in effect. I don't know if it only comes out for carnival after an event, but do they still do, you know, the testing on the roads? Breathalyzer?
Well, the police have assured us they're still out there doing lots of breathalyzer checks, and I know that from an NGO point of view, because in Magistrates Court, they do send drive offenders to us for rehabilitation. So in our breathalyzer efforts to educate the public on how important it is to get help if you're an alcoholic. We send them to Alcoholics Anonymous if we feel you have a drinking problem. Sometimes we know this because at the beginning of our classes, we breathalyze the participants. So for instance, the magistrate's court send DUI offenders to us. We breathalyze the offenders before the class. If you have had any alcohol in your system, as a ward of the court, we advise you that you may have a problem and therefore go to see Alcoholics Anonymous. These classes are on a Wednesday and a Thursday from 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's no way a participant having just gone through a magistrate's court for a DUI offense should have any alcohol in their system. So once you've had alcohol in your system, we advise you to try and join up into the Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step program, which we believe in. We have met with Alcoholics Anonymous in the past, and we send lots of DUI offenders to them. And then we do an intense two-day program to educate the public who are coming through our classes on biology, simple biology. What happens when you drink on an empty stomach? What happens when you drink and you've eaten properly, especially protein? How the body digests food? How alcohol affects your reaction time, how it affects your risk management. And we go through intense two-day program, like a refresher course to the ticketable offenses for, for driving too fast on the nation's roads, etc. So it's an intense two-day program. And the police are out there because these drive offenders are still coming to us every week. I can assure you of that. And also drugs. We have to be careful that, you know, the same way you feel good when you smoke a weed, mm-hmm. when you have a drink, you know, it relaxes you and all of that. Well, call a taxi. Call a taxi, because life is about balance, and therefore we appeal to the public not to drink and drive, not to take drugs and drive.
Mm-hmm. There's some, I've always, but this is a culture, a way where, you know, somebody would leave a bar and they would hold the keys. But in Trinidad, you know, you would see somebody drunk as whatever, go with the keys and go into the car and drive off. Should establishment be held responsible, or should be there some kind of fine or something being done for anybody that leaves an establishment drunk, causes an accident, you know, gets into the vehicle, causes an accident while drunk leaving an establishment?
Well, certainly that's the law in other countries, particularly like Canada, etc. But it seems as though we in Trinidad and Tobago, our culture, we think that some of those laws are draconian. I say, what is the price of a life? What is the price of an injury? Someone who is so, who has been in such a collision that you are injured and your family now has to look after you for the rest of your life because you have driven home from a bar under the influence of alcohol. Instead of calling a taxi, a responsible friend taking you home, you know, you have caused this collision. A bartender may know that you're a regular. Yes, he has a responsibility. He has a responsibility to say, you want me to call a taxi? You want me to call a friend? You want me to call your partner? Definitely, everybody has a responsibility to make sure that we get home safely to our families who are waiting for us. So I agree with you, yes. Certainly that bartender has a responsibility, that establishment has a responsibility. Maybe just an ad on in the car park or outside the bar saying the telephone numbers of the taxi drivers in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, anything like that makes a difference. So I think that we all want to see a safer, healthier Trinidad and Tobago, and we all have a responsibility.
Hey, well, maybe that's something that a business you can start. Every bar, drinking establishment should have a list of drivers where you could call. So drivers out there, you could put your numbers up by the bar. If you don't want to drive home, you call this number, right?
Yes, there's so many things that we can go into business when it comes to road safety, you know. Mm-hmm. I often think of that, a little ad outside the bar, the taxi drivers could get together, mm-hmm. and do a little poster and plant it on the bars with the bar owners' permission. I mean, you know, those are little businesses that can certainly happen to encourage responsible behavior and the reward is to the taxi driver who gets a phone call, you know. So I think that there are lots of opportunities out there for small businesses to think outside the box and to become creative, you know.
Definitely. I think we just, you know, entrepreneurship, the way to go. What about people with children who drive with their children? A lot of people don't know when, how old a child in a car seat should be. Sometimes I see children sitting in the front. They have a certain age. At what age should a child be allowed to sit in the front? And at what age should a child be or not be in a car seat?
Okay, so again, our little booklet, which is on our website, if you don't have time to come into our office, discuss the child seat. And the law is that once you're 5 years and under, you should be in a car seat or a booster seat, depending on your age. Now, we want to go on further, because as far as Arrive Alive is concerned, until you are 13 or you have a certain height and a certain weight, again, as a mother, as a father, as a guardian, look up what is the international standard. Because most vehicles now have airbags. Imagine your daughter or son in the front seat of a vehicle, you get into a serious crash, and that airbag deploys. So the airbag deploys, you're not wearing a seatbelt, which is critical that your passenger in the front seat in particular wears a seatbelt, and you have severe damage when you have a small child who is maybe underweight, who's not of a certain height, is sitting in the front seat. Serious damage, internal bleeding to your internal organs, broken jaws, broken arms, you know. So we say at Arrive Alive, the law is 5 and under, but until your child is of a certain height and a certain weight, 13, please buckle up in the back seat. Put them in the back seat, insist they sit in the back seat, and buckle up. Buckle
right.
up.
Nice.
When you see children and passengers being thrown out of a vehicle, it often means that they're not wearing a seatbelt.
Let's get a question here on the WhatsApp.
Can we get reckless truck drivers to obey? Can the police start stopping truck drivers that are supposed to be doing 65 and are doing 120? Is that even possible?
These truck drivers, boy, sometimes these truck, you see these truck trailers, so intimidating on the road, speeding. You know, what can we do about that?
Well, what we can do is hopefully we can talk to the TPS after this program and ask them to do a little educational campaign for a month or so and focus on truck drivers and ensure that they get tickets to protect the public. Because, of course, as a truck driver, you have a huge responsibility. We just saw a truck driver run off the road, and thank God for those cable barriers, because the truck driver was caught by the cable barriers, as we would have had a serious crossover collision this week with no doubt loss of life. Because when that kind of tonnage is coming at you at over 65 kilometers an hour, you can imagine the kind of force we're talking about, the kind of energy we're talking about. So maybe the TTPS could do a little month of ensuring the truck drivers understand why it's important that they maintain their speed, the lawful speed. And remember also, as we're on this topic, our roads are engineered at a certain speed. So when you see Arrive Alive get very upset when, you know, speed limits are increased, I'll give you around Savannah as a good example, and certain of our main roads and highways, it's because Arrive Alive has been educated by the WHO, by the United Nations, etc., by the International Road Federation, by big bodies who tell you that roads are engineered for certain speed. So when we increase speed limits randomly, we are making our roads more unsafe. And that's why even in our booklets, we say our roads are not safe, because we've increased speed limits randomly because of public pressure, because of doing what's popular, not necessarily what is right, and therefore making our roads more dangerous. So I appeal to the truck drivers today and all the driving public, bear in mind that the speed limit, it is not necessarily a good idea to drive to the speed limits, especially when there are potholes, especially when the markings are not accurate, especially when the barriers and the guardrails are absent or not well maintained. As I keep saying, most of the public in TNT are well-traveled. We go to New York to shop, we go to Toronto, we go as far as London, look around and see what's going on in those cities. The speed limits have been decreased, in the case of London, to 20 miles per hour to protect life. Look at the population in London, England, see what the population is, see what the size is, because they respect life, because they're not numb to death, they're not numb to carnage, right? They have decreased the speed limit, I'm repeating myself, to 20 miles per hour because they respect healthy road users like cyclists and pedestrians who are trying to improve their lifestyle, who are trying not to get diabetes as they get older, heart disease as they get older. I'm not a cyclist, I'm not necessarily athletic, but I so respect those pedestrians and those cyclists that have made a choice to change their lifestyles, to lead a healthier lifestyle. And we need to look at what is happening in the rest of the world that we admire when we travel and see how they have changed, especially since COVID, how they've changed their transportation. They believe in mass transportation of buses. They believe in cycling and walking and are not necessarily using cars all the time. I make an appeal to drivers to educate ourselves, to the truck drivers to slow down and obey the speed limit, especially during this rainy season. We don't want to see anybody else run off the roads. Yeah. We want to adjust our speed to the road conditions. We know that the roads are not necessarily in the best condition. We've always known that.
All right, let's keep it for about 5 more minutes. Let's take this call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Bates, and good afternoon to your guests. Ma'am, I take your advice, you know, not only sincerely, but, you know, very, very seriously. My thing is, though, that is to me, 100 kilometers on our roads, highways in particular, I find it fine, because driving too slow could be also a hazard. But the problem I have is the removal of, I think, the demerit point system. I have a problem with that, because I was exposed. In fact, I got a ticket. And when I saw that I was missing points, it made me conscious of driving even much, you know, carefully further to not lose points. In removing that, I think it's a problem. The other thing, I think the fact that our highway is built up, you know, it's built within, you know, a built up area, I think there is where we need more laws in relation to highways, but I don't have a problem with the current speed limit. But what I want from you, should drivers in Trinidad all go to what you call defensive driving? I listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All drivers should do defensive driving courses. Most certainly, defensive driving courses should include the maintenance of your vehicle, should include some first aid, and defensive driving should be incorporated into our licensing program, as I keep saying, to ensure that we understand hazard perception and risk management. We absolutely continue to advocate for defensive driving. Defensive driving is different to driver's education. It teaches you the skill of driving and the skill of ensuring that you manage your risk once you get behind the wheel of a car. So we absolutely advocate for defensive driving.
All right, let's get another question here. I believe once you cause death by a DUI, you should be immediately suspended from ever holding a driver's permit again and charged for murder by the motor vehicle, and especially when they are fully loaded, because it's harder to stop with the load. Or I guess that person is talking about the trucks. Somebody else is saying here, most of the pubs away stop selling alcohol at 1:30 a.m. over here. Well, they sell day and night. Yeah, here, over here is any day, any time. So that's not happening. There's a different culture over there. Let's get one more.
I've been told by truck drivers and owners of the companies that they work for, 65 is too slow. They have to leave the office too early. It takes too long to get the goods to destination, etc., etc. They try to justify why they're allowed to go more than 65. They don't wear seat belts, which is another madness. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a
all very unfortunate, because I don't understand how why our culture thinks that it is okay to drive you know, fast, when it is obvious, it is just common sense that your risk increase the faster you travel.
You know,
and
that,
therefore,
we
want to say, in one breath we're saying that the roads are not in good condition, that the markings are not the best, that the barriers are not well maintained, and in the next breath we're saying that the speed limit should either be increased or should stay at 100 kilometers an hour. You know, that contravenes everything, you know. So I sometimes wonder if we're listening to ourselves.
There was a social media video the other day where a gentleman was actually driving 250 kilometers. He was just showing his vehicle could go fast, and he was going 250 kilometers on the highway. He was never caught.
Yeah.
He was out there, and it was.
You know, and the police, I want to say the police are doing a great job, because we've had a decrease in the number of fatalities once again year to date. And it just shows the tremendous job that our TTPS highway division is doing, you know, the traffic branch, because to have a decrease when, you know, we have had a stall in the demerit point system, the drivers are not being re-educated, that those drivers are not being called back in and re-educated, it just shows the tremendous job the TTPS is doing out there to enforce the laws that do exist. So, you know, we want to make sure that we all understand the responsibility we have, because I know I'm running out of time, and that we're not advocating for higher speed limits when we know our roads are not in the best condition. And that those of us who have big, fast, expensive cars understand the police are there looking at you, and don't quarrel with our government. Don't advocate to our government that they should do the incorrect thing and not do the right thing, because you have maybe 60,000 drivers who should not be on our nation's roads because they have 200 points.
All right, hold on there, caller. Caller, yeah, okay, let's go.
Good afternoon, thanks for taking my call. Good afternoon, Sharon Neal. Sharon, thank you for being there for me.
You're welcome.
Good work. Mr. Englefield, Neil, I am totally against total removal, and I support you all with the demerit points. Right? I think where was punitive in the demerit points, you all should advocate for it to be tweaked. That might be unfair and unjust, probably with the transfer of cars and what have been more worth rolling over and stuff like that. But the former UNC minister, Stephen Cadies, He's actually against removing the demerit points in a total way. So I support you, Ms. Englefield, and as I say, you know my situation by not wearing seatbelts. People don't understand until it hits home, because the average Trinidadian feel invincible, right? So I support you all the way, you know that, all the years, your dedication and your consistency. But as I said, I have no problem with tweaking the demerit points, as former UNC Minister Stephen Cadies say, but to remove it, I think it's a bad thing to do in an indisciplined driving society.
All right, thank you, Neil. Yeah, we get the point. Yeah, but like we said before, like I asked you, that's the first thing I asked you before about the demerit points and where you stand, and, you know, your grade should not have been, removed. All right?
Oh. So I'm looking at
it. Hello, Ms. Englefield.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, like I said, we are.
With all, I think that the supporters for the removal should go back to our government, because it's now our government, and it should really think about what they have done, to be very honest. Mm-hmm. You know, the population voted, and I support the government. We run an apolitical NGO, and therefore we need to rethink this and appeal to the government that maybe we made a mistake. You know, maybe we were thinking of ourselves in a very selfish manner and not thinking of what's safe for all road users on the nation's roads, you know?
All right.
So maybe that's something that we need to think about.
Definitely. Well, hello? I thought you ended.
Sorry.
Okay, definitely. Well, we'll end on this note. I know you have to go, so thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for the support. Keep up the good work. And remember, like you said, to call the Ministry of Transport and Aviation.
Civil Aviation.
On those road lines, you know? All right, thank you very
much. Yeah, you're very welcome. All the best and take care and be safe.
All right, okay. Sharon Englefield of Arrive Alive, people. Right here on Freedom 106.5.